Welcome to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast, the show that brings you tidbits from all aspects of the soccer world. Sometimes serious, sometimes zany, always opinionated. Now, here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelain.
You are listening to another edition of the Two Daft Yanks Podcast. I am your host, Chad Smith, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Mr. Corey Chatelain.
Yeah, Arsenal murder and romance on Valentine's Day yesterday was awesome.
I guess you could say that. So let's give a round of applause for everybody and everything, and let's do a rundown. So we're going to talk. Of course, we'll lead off the show with Arsenal hosting Leicester City, then Manchester City hosting Spurs, and then we have a not safe for work edition of This Week in Daftness. So tune in for that. And then we'll finish up the show handicapping the title race and then talking about all the big money shenanigans going on in China, in the Chinese league, Corey.
Yeah, the Chinese league, suddenly everybody's interested in it. It's even the MLS, since they bought Obafemi Martins yesterday or the day before. So yes, a lot of a lot of interest going forward, and looks like, you know, I might have to pay attention this coming season just to see what all the hullabaloo is about.
Well, there isn't much, but hey, let's get the crowd fired up again and let's get right into this. But actually, first, I'd be remiss if I did not mention, after, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years now of Corey having a Twitter avatar with a wolf.
Yeah.
He actually revealed what he really looks like to the world.
Well, as I was telling our buddy Myron, I finally got a picture that I actually kind of liked. So I was like, hey, maybe it's time to actually put my ugly mug up on the Twitters. And there it is.
There we go. So yeah. So at LSU Arsenal Corey is where you could find him. And same thing with me. I've had the same picture for a long time because I'm never going to have a better picture than what I have up there. So,
well, the thing I hate, I'm one of those people that, you know, I always get the fat neck whenever I try to take a picture of myself. So, you know, a buddy of mine was in town the other weekend and somebody took a picture of us and I cropped my head out because I was like, hey, I actually look decent in that picture. So there you go.
Yeah, I can hear you. So let's gong that out. And let's get talking about here, Corey. Super Sunday, as they were calling it, lived up to all the hype, I would say. And they early kickoff that morning, Arsenal versus Leicester, lived up to all you could ask for.
Yeah, it was pretty insane. Everybody that follows me on Twitter, like I said, at the end of the match, I was kind of in this state of disbelief, you know, both elated and pissed off at the same time. So, yeah, it was I was kind of in shock.
Okay, so let's go through some of these talking points one by one here.
Sure.
I've got some written down.
There's plenty of them.
Yeah, I watched the match of the day, but let's talk about, in the first half, the excellent goalkeeping by Schmeichel to come out, I know, I'm guessing 30 yards to go on a challenge to where if he gets it wrong, it's red card, penalty kick.
Well, not a penalty kick. It would have been a red card, but
Well, it'd been a red card and probably a penalty. Well, you're right. No penalty. Sorry.
Yeah, see, he's like 15 yards out
making,
of his box.
I'm making up rules now.
Yeah. I mean, hell, I'd take it.
Yeah, sorry.
Just saying.
Yeah, I forgot. You don't get for denying of a goal-scoring opportunity, you don't get a penalty kick. Sorry. Good Lord.
Yeah, well, not that far out the box.
Yeah, no. Maybe at Manchester United, you might not call it against you.
And you know, as diabolical as Atkinson was all day, you know, maybe he would have awarded one, but yeah, that far out, it's I don't think he would have gotten one.
No, you're right. And then followed right after that Schmeichel sliding tackle, Leicester came on the counter and Vardy had an excellent goal scoring opportunity, but he kind of didn't get any power behind a header and Cech made a fairly comfortable save in the end.
I'd say it's, I don't know if it's comfortable, but it's a pretty good save.
But I think you'd agree if Vardy got any type of power on that, it's a goal.
I guess, because he made, you know, I'm not sure why he didn't. So,
no,
again,
that's
one of those I'm kind of, you know, I kind of had a bone of contention with people all day because, like I said, that was the one that everybody was talking about when, you know, we should have been up 2-0 before that. And, you know, Leicester has their strength on the counter. Vardy, you know, they get Vardy against the fullback. And, you know, why didn't he score? So, and like I said, it's not like he was going up against another center back and got bodied off the ball. So I'm not sure why he didn't get a lot of power on it because, like I said, I mean, it wasn't a bullet header, but he had decent contact. So, again, I'm not sure, you know, I'm not trying to be a dick, but,
you know, I understand.
I think he did, so.
I'll have to watch the replay again to see what was going on. And I could see what he was trying to do. I think he was trying to, you know, they teach you play the ball to the ground, head it down, make it more difficult for the goalkeeper. But it looked to me that if he'd have just headed it, you know, shoulder high anywhere, it was probably going to go in. But yeah, that's for another day. So, and then followed up by that, I do believe this was still in the first half. Was it the controversial penalty?
Yeah, it was about 35 minutes.
Uh-huh. Awarded
35th minute mark, somewhere around there.
Awarded to Leicester City when Nacho Monorail, as I like to call him, stuck out an errant leg, and Vardy, you know, was it a dive or not? I don't know. So what's your viewpoint on the penalty call?
You know, I actually broke with the Arsenal camp on this one. That's one of those I mean, I labeled it a 50-50 penalty kick, meaning and you know, obviously on Twitter sometimes you can't explain. That's one of those that, you know, Vardy does leave his leg in, but I'm in the unpopular camp that says that's okay. You know, if you create the contact or if you create an opportunity that there can be contact, just because the striker looks for the contact, to me that's not cheating in my book. Even though he does kind of make a slight movement away from the ball to make sure he runs into Monreal, it still looks like a natural movement to me. So, I mean, I understand where everybody goes that it's diving, but like I said, I am one of those pricks that says that, you know, if you make the, if you can buy the contact, you know, to use the basketball term, then, you know, to me, that's the defender's fault because, like I said, Monreal didn't really give him a lot of out there. And even though he was backing away, like I said, that's one of those that, if it's going the other way, I definitely want it for us. So, like I said, I definitely broke with the Arsenal camp on that one. And that, like I said, I didn't necessarily like the call, but, you know, understand why the ref gave it.
Yeah, and Monreal, really, you know, when you plant your foot like that, when you stick it out, the rule is in soccer, you can't block people. So Vardy had every right to take any path that he wanted to go get to the ball, and he took the path through Monreal. Sorry, I keep calling him because I make fun of him too much. He went through Monreal, and so there's your penalty call.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, as a defender, his goose was cooked basically when he made the awkward attempt and didn't get anything on the ball. Because, again, if he stands there and Vardy takes two or three strides and then runs into him, yes, that's different. But Vardy's next step is the, like I said, that's one of those where, you know, from that standpoint, to me, it's one of those that even if you move into the guy to draw the contact, as long as it's the next step and it could have been a natural progression kind of thing, to me, that's, like I said, to me, that's more on the defender. Or, you know, the onus is more on the defender not to create that awkward contact.
That's right. So then Vardy stepped up, converted the penalty that was awarded to him. And then in the second half, we have all kinds of things.
Well, yeah, so I was more pissed that the whole sequence was started by a foul by Wes Morgan on Ozil over the back that wasn't called. So, like I said, that was the thing I was aggravated on that play, is that it never should have happened because we should have got a foul the other way. So like I said, while everybody was bitching about Vardy diving, it was like me and two other people bitching about where the hell was the call on Ozil, you know?
Yeah, and I guess in the middle, too, you have the advantage being played where I do believe Koscielny took out, was it Gray?
No, it was Conte.
It was Conte, yeah.
Yeah.
And a pretty nasty tackle.
Yeah, it's a pretty nice little submarine tackle, you know, like the when you shoot the knee like an American football. So, you know, that's one of those that he tried to break up the attack, and I don't have a problem with it. So, yeah.
So there in the second half, then it all kicked off up 1-0. Danny Simpson, who got two yellows in pretty quick succession, and I guess I've seen people arguing about the validity of either of them, and I could see it. But at the same time, when you're a player and you're on a yellow, okay, so you got a yellow, you got to be smart enough. You got to know that you can't give the referee any decision to make to send you off with a second yellow. So I do believe that everybody in the EPL, and especially you as an Arsenal fan and I as a Spurs fan, should send Danny Simpson a thank you card for making this craziness all possible, because now we have quite the crazy title chase that it looks like it's going to be, to where before Leicester potentially could have opened up an 8-point gap, and now it's sitting at 2.
Yeah, because the people were questioning the validity of both of Simpson's yellows when the first one individually is not a yellow. He'd already been warned in the first half, and he was working on his fourth foul. So it was basically the first one, even though it was, like I said, individually, it was fairly innocuous. It was, you know, the persistent infringement foul. So the people that were complaining about that, like I said, he had kind of been, you know, he hadn't been outright warned, but, you know, the ref had a word with him earlier in the first half. And because, again, even Ranieri at the end of the game was, you know, was complaining about, oh, well, you know, the yellows were, you know, we basically got, you know, they were harsher with us. But again, it was one of those that, like most teams, because of the whole, you know, Arsenal doesn't like it up them narrative, a lot of teams, when it comes to the Emirates, they do, you know, what is referred to now by everybody as the tactical fouling. And they basically take turns going in and taking chunks out of people. And that was second half, for whatever reason, Atkinson, you know, I was referring to him as pity calls, because it was the same stuff that Leicester had been getting away with in the first half. And he had warned a couple of people. In the second half, he finally started calling it. So like I said, to me, that's one of the things that I think people are being a little disingenuous about, is that, you know, once you have a word with somebody about that, you don't have to then warn everybody about it, you know?
Mm-hmm. So then after the red card, Ranieri made the move of taking off Mahrez, mm-hmm, and putting on the Polish defender, what's his name again? Mazurawski.
Wasilewski.
Yeah, however you want to pronounce it. I've heard it several different ways. And then you could see that it didn't really change how Leicester played, because they just played with a man less. And it definitely taxed them in the second half, as you could see, because Arsenal certainly had the bulk of the possession. They weren't really a threat to score a goal, but they were hanging in there for the most part. And then all of a sudden, Theo Walcott pops up and scores a goal. And then when that happens, it's 1-1. At that point in time, you could only see Arsenal getting the winner.
Where Leicester had the problem with the man down is when they had the clear balls and they only had Vardy to basically chase after clearances. So, you know, when they took Mahrez off, they didn't have another outlet for their counterattack. So they basically had to long ball it. And then, you know, with Vardy being up top by himself after that, you know, like I said, at that point it was basically, you know, futile. And a lot of times they would clear it, you know, only to Arsenal's back line, basically.
Mm-hmm. So it was 1-1, and Arsenal missed all kinds of great chances. I can remember Mertesacker missing a header, Giroud.
Giroud had a couple of chances.
And so it looked like, hey, you know, Leicester is going to get off the hook, maybe get a point, which would be a pretty good point, a man down for a good chunk against a quality opposition. And then you have the, I don't know what he was doing, the Polish defender, not even really, I don't know, not paying attention, no awareness at all. And as soon as that he made that foul and that was going to be the last kick, I said to myself, Arsenal is scoring here. I knew it. I was like, this is going to happen. And then sure enough, it did happen, and I was still shocked, even though I said to myself, this was going to happen.
Yeah, because there again, that was another thing that I kind of had a bone of contention with some people, that all Vasilevsky's got to do there is basically run a couple steps and then stop and stand his ground and turn Monreal back inside where everybody's defending. But again, he had to do the Arsenal doesn't like it up him, so I'm going to go in strong because that's what they had been doing all day. And he fouls Monreal when he doesn't have to, which was doubly stupid because where we were the most dangerous all day and where, like I said, I would argue with a few people that Leicester was quote-unquote the better team on the day. You know, for all the talk about, you know, how towering Robert Huth was last week, the only place where we had been very dangerous all day was on set pieces. So it was doubly dumb for Vasilevsky to commit the foul there because it allowed us, you know, to push everybody forward. Because again, that's the other thing, is that if Vasilevsky stops there and forces Monreal to put a cross in, we only have four in the box at that time. Because of the set piece, we now get we can now push everybody into the box, and now we have eight in the box to aim for. So like I said, it was doubly dumb on his part, because all he's got to do there is basically do nothing and let Monreal put in a cross when they have numbers in the box, you know?
Yeah, and I think we saw why he doesn't play very often. And I wouldn't say that it was a, you know, they all get stuck in because it's Arsenal. I think it was just stupid, regardless of what you're thinking.
Well, I say that because that's how they had been playing that all day, where because again, when teams play us, it definitely seems like refs allow a lot more of the extra little body into a tackle. Because again, that's where they were getting away with a lot of persistent fouling in the first half, to where, like, you know, like the Morgan challenge on Ozil, where you come in and, like I said, you kind of leave your body in a little. So again, maybe that's just Arsenal bias, but to me, because again, if you're not going to go in there strong, why is he going in at all right there?
I'm going to say it's Arsenal bias. I'm sorry, which is fine. Everybody has, you see things differently when you're watching your team play. I watched the game.
He jumps into the man.
Well, no, I know. I'm not saying that, but you're talking about other incidents. That was stupid, and there's no defending that. And I don't think it was let's hit him, because, you know, you shouldn't do that in that situation, is what I'm saying.
Right. So why does he jump into the guy? That's my whole point. Is
okay, because he's not very smart.
Exactly. No. Yeah, he's not smart because he's doing I'm going to jump into him because I'm going to take him out because Arsenal don't like it up in him. Because
But why would you do that with the game on the line? See, that's silly. I don't think it has anything to do with that.
Okay, then you're right. Then please explain why.
I don't know. I said because he's dumb.
Exactly. He's dumb because that's what's in his head. That's maybe the thought process.
Okay, maybe. It's
a stupid thought process to
maybe,
go.
I don't know. Hey, we should ask him.
Instead of stopping here,
yeah,
Arsenal don't like it up in him, so I'm going to clean him out.
Maybe. We should ask him. Did anybody ask him? So did you ask him? Is he on Twitter?
No.
Can we track him down?
No, but I've already asked you. Please explain why he's jumping in there. And your answer is he's stupid, which is also true. But the reason why he's stupid is because he's jumping into him because he doesn't like it up in him.
Possibly. Because again,
all he's got to do is stand there.
That's true, yeah. So there we go. We'll leave it at that. So Arsenal get the winner. Danny Welbeck, after a nine-month layoff. Or is it longer than that? Was it nine? Yeah, 9 months out.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Scores a winner. So the English international gets the job done, and the celebrations were quite intense.
Yeah, which of course brought out the celebration police.
Yeah, I didn't see anybody like that. If you're if you're criticizing that celebration in that situation, then you had no childhood, maybe. And maybe you were like working in a factory at the age of 7 and your soul's been crushed. I don't know.
Yeah. Or you've never actually won anything in your entire life at all. And like most people that tend to espouse those kind of thoughts actually have no idea what you're talking about.
All right.
Not, so let's not you down. Specifically, but
yeah. All right. Let's count this out. All right, so in between the first match and the third match of the day, we had the shellacking of old Aston Villa by Liverpool. Not much to say there. Absolutely terrible.
Yeah, Villa looked absolutely awful.
Yeah, and so
even more so than normal.
Yeah, and the rumors that Remy Gard may walk by the end of the season are growing, and I would expect it to happen at this point in time. Why would you stay? So we'll see what happens there. We'll see. But that's a bad situation. So that was the middle of the sandwich.
You're still getting paid.
Well, I guess you're still getting paid, but yeah. But at the same time, ugh. That's all you can say. So all right. So then to finish up Sunday, there in Manchester City, the blue side of Manchester City, we had Spurs versus City. Corey, and the big thing here is that Manchester City has kind of been a bugaboo team for Spurs over the past, I'd say, 4 to 5 years, to where they've been absolutely getting destroyed. Just it's been a very bad matchup, and the key thing is if you look at it, is Sergio Aguero in his career against Spurs entering the weekend, 8 games, 10 goals. So it's been that type of matchup to where Aguero has just been a goal-scoring machine. Spurs can't stop him. Earlier in the season, Spurs did defeat City 4-1 at White Hart Lane. And so this was a matchup that I thought we'd see City play a lot better in, considering A, they were thrashed by Spurs in the reverse fixture, and B, they were coming off a loss to Leicester City. But it seems to me that they really didn't start playing Manchester City until they fell down 1-0 on the penalty, which was pretty controversial as well, on Raheem Sterling, the handball. What is your view on that incident?
I think the handball that wasn't called in the Arsenal game was a lot more of an actual handball than Sterling's. Because again, that's one of those that if that's a handball, then there's a lot of penalties that I've seen throughout the season that weren't called that needed to be called. So handball in the box is definitely something that I think the officiating organization needs to address over the summer, because it's getting to be the EPL version of the what is a catch in the NFL, because it just seems like, that kind of standard of what's an actual handball, it's kind of all over the map now, because when you hear pundits, you can tell that they don't really know either, because there's this idea about, well, it's, a natural movement and this and that. It's like, well, last time I checked, that this whole natural movement thing actually isn't in the rules. It's all to do whether it was deliberate or not. So this whole unnatural movement, it's like, okay, well, if I start doing this, well, all of a sudden it's a natural movement. Because that was the thing with the Conte handball in Leicester. It's like, oh, well, you can't call it there because he's moving his hand into his body. Well, where was the ball? In his body. So there, it's technically might not be a natural movement because, yeah, maybe he is doing a quote-unquote natural movement to actually block the ball, because that's where the ball actually is. Because the other thing is like, well, Sterling's turning his back, so you don't really know. But again, that's one of those that, how do you know in his mind he's maybe going, well, I'm going to turn my back, and if the ball hits my arm, it hits my arm. So like I said, that's one of those that once that kind of that idea is out there, well, of course people are going to start doing that, because, well, I'm just going to turn my back, and it's an accident, so they're not going to call it because they think I'm just turning my back to try and make it look accidental, you know? So,
yeah.
Like I said, I think it's something that definitely needs to be addressed over the summer.
It does, because it's the rule is applied widely inconsistently. And it's you're right. Nobody really knows what is the rule. What are these referees being told? So, go ahead.
Yeah, like last year, Chelsea at the end of the year was doing this thing where they were sliding and they were putting their hands up in front of their face to basically slightly make it like make the body bigger, but because it looks like the hands are in the body, if it hits the hands, it's a natural movement because he's trying to protect himself. It's like, if that's the thing, well, maybe now we start teaching technique like that. So like I said, it was technically making them slightly bigger because they would go in sliding with their hands just outside of their body. It's like I said, it's one of those things that if they're going to start using this natural body stuff more often, then that's something that they need to kind of codify more or at least address it, you know, with some sort of mandate or something.
Yeah. And I remember this now that you bring that up. If you saw the Manchester United game on Saturday, there was a situation to where Rooney was in the box and the ball was kicked pretty hard towards his face and he reached up with his hand and knocked the ball down. And they said, oh, it's not a handball because he was protecting himself. And I'm right. Well, I'm pretty sure that's not the rule.
Well, yeah, because the other thing they always harp on is, he was so close to it, he couldn't react properly or whatever they say. And it's like, well, if that's the case, just run with your hands out, but just keep them close to your face because, I'm protecting myself and I'm only 4 yards away from the ball, you know? Yeah. So, like I said, it's like if that's – and again, those may be just, you know, punditry, catchphrase that they just jump on. But like I said, if that's the way refs are taught to kind of look at the call, then I think it's something that needs to be addressed because it just seems like it's not being applied the same across all the games.
Mm-hmm. So, but I will not cry a tear for City because I do remember, I'm pretty sure in two of the last 3 years when we played at City, Spurs have been red carded with a penalty kick given to that red card, which were falsely wrong. And the league came out twice when we played City and said, we rescind the red card because that was not the proper call. So, hey, when you get two red cards and you lose two games because you got two red cards and two penalty kicks, and then the league rescinds the penalty, or not the penalty, but the card, there we go. City, get a little bit of your own medicine. So, ha. We'll not cry for you.
Yeah, because like I said,
welcome to life for everybody else.
Yeah, because like I said, both of the penalty calls in both games, again, they were the kind that if it's my team, I'm asking for it. If it's not my team, I don't like it. So like I said, it just falls in that percentage thing of, you know, what goes around comes around. And like you just said, it finally came around for City.
So yeah, so Spurs were up 1-0.
Came around for y'all.
Yeah, when Harry Kane converted the penalty, and he did it pretty nicely. He waited for Hart to commit, and then he just put it right down the middle. Then in the second half there, that's when City, as I said, they decided to start playing. And tactically, Pellegrini did an interesting thing to where, since Yaya Toure doesn't really have the athletic ability and maybe the energy to cover as much ground as he used to, they were playing him as a number 10. Instead of further back. And he was doing some good things, putting us under pressure at times. And that really spurred them on. And they were able to get an equalizing goal, I do believe, in the 75th minute from our favorite player, Khaleesi.
I eat nachos.
Iheanacho, again, as we said. I think he's got a pretty bright future. We've said this several times. I mean, he's just playing a cameo role this season, but he's chipping in some goals in some pretty important situations. And then at that point in time, I opined on Twitter because I'm a Spurs fan and I've seen this too often. I said, well, we'll be lucky to win this game now because City was just all over us. And I was like, well, we're going to wilt like we usually do. But I keep forgetting that Pochettino's in charge now. And over the season and I guess two-thirds with him in control, he's changed the mentality of this side to where when we do give up a goal, we don't mope. You know, we don't drop back. It makes us fight even harder. And we responded pretty quickly with Eric Lamella coming on as a sub, making a direct run right up the middle and playing a beautiful through ball to Christian Eriksen, who scored the game winner on his birthday.
You know, it was the go-ahead goal was definitely a pretty little move. And as much as I make fun of Lamella, that's he's finally start this season. I finally started to see what Spurs saw in him at Roma. So, you know, obviously it's not a coincidence with everybody else playing well this year that y'all are up there near the top.
Yeah. So then we had a hold on. Spurs did at the end. City came back and they were attacking quite a bit because obviously they needed a goal and they needed some kind of points because, again, as I said, they dropped 3 points at home to Leicester the week before. And they ended up dropping these 3 points. So that's a pretty big blow to them going forward here. And then Hugo Lloris made an absolutely huge, and I would say it's world-class save. I don't know if you got to see it. If you see this in slow motion.
The one where he went back in front of Otamendi.
That's right. He was on his near post, and I watched it in slow motion. It took him, he went from near post to far post in 5 steps and got a fingertip on it on what would have been a certain goal if Otamendi would have gotten anything on it on his head, and he was unmarked. He was wide open. And so world-class save by Lloris to save the game and to preserve the 3 points.
You know, because what was impressive on that to me was not just the ground he covered, but he's basically diving almost leaning backwards. So, you know, usually when you do that, you're not really going to get you're not going to cover as much ground as you would diving forwards or at least, you know, to be able to time, you know, to get to the ball. So like I said, that's what was impressive to me was that it was just an incredibly athletic play all around.
No, you're right. And that is a good point that he was diving backwards to where he was reaching backwards above his head to tip the ball away. You don't see that very often. That's a very awkward position to put your body in.
Yeah. So like I said, just to still be able to make contact with the ball like that, because you're basically looking up over your forehead, you'll eventually lose sight of the ball. So like I said, that's what was most impressive about that save to me.
Yeah. So there's probably a lot of luck involved in that, I'm thinking now. And when you think about the physics of it all.
Well, yeah, but I think that's one of those that, you know, kind of like, it's luck, but, you know, kind of like what our football coach used to tell me is that at some point you don't have time to actually think, you just have to react, and you know, it becomes a muscle memory type of thing, and you just kind of you know, it's not an exact calculation, but you just kind of put your hand where you think it might go, kind of thing. And you know, sometimes when you're really good, you know, like Ben Hogan, the more I practice, the luckier I get. So I'm sure Lloris just practices a lot with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so partially thanks to Danny Simpson and I guess Hugo Lloris and Mark Clattenburg, we have quite the interesting title race that we'll break down here in a little bit. Leicester is still 2 points clear. Spurs in second, 2 points back ahead of Arsenal on goal differential, and then Arsenal in third, and then Manchester City 6 points back of Leicester in fourth.
Yeah, so obviously the North London Derby in March is going to be a humdinger.
All right. Well, speaking of a humdinger, we got a humdinger of a This Week in Daftness, folks. So you all know what time it is. So let's bring her in.
Two Daft Yanks presents This Week in Daftness.
I can't believe that the referee didn't give a penalty. That I can't believe. Something that looks a campaign.
We will have more transparency. What I will say is that in an emerging league, there are times when we are figuring out those rules as we go along.
This is not just a dream. It's a wet dream of orgasmic proportions.
How daft.
All right, folks. This Week in Daftness comes to us from the Netherlands. this week, Mr. Corey.
Yeah, and this is definitely a, you know, the Dutch, they can be kind of kooky, and this, you know, this one's kind of kooky.
That's right. So as you all know, the staple of any soccer slash football walkout is the teams come out onto the pitch with some kind of, you know, anthem of the league or whatever, playing blah, blah, blah. And you have your little, what they call mascots over there, which is not, you know, a guy in a suit like here. But, you know, some little local kids from the local youth football teams all kitted up for a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to go out with a match or onto the field before a match in full kit with their heroes. But they kind of changed it up here for Valentine's Day in the Netherlands. And the Volvijk versus Emmen match, the mascots were replaced by Dutch lingerie models.
Yeah, which, like I said, it's kind of kooky. I'm not sure what was going on or why, you know, Dutch lingerie models have to do with Valentine's Day per se, at least in football terms. But yeah, I saw people tweeting the picture during the day and I was like, yeah, I'm not really sure what's going on there.
Yeah, so you could go to tootaftyanks.com, but don't do this while you're at work. And you'll see all the pictures. We have a link there. You can see a bunch of pictures. Because as you could guess, Dutch lingerie models are pretty good looking.
Yeah, kind of, sort of, you know, if you're into that kind of thing.
Just a little. But we should say that the home side, Volvijk, did lose their match 1-0 to Emmen. And I will say, Corey, that after that pregame walkout, they lost because they were facing stiff competition.
Ouch.
Yeah. Like how I lined that up?
Yeah, the only – well, not the only thing, but the worst thing about that joke was I didn't think of it myself.
Yeah.
Because I like me a bad joke.
Did you see that coming from a mile away?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, of course I saw it coming from
a
mile
away. Oh, you saw it coming. Okay.
Well, hey-o.
That's right. So three cheers for – or a round of applause for our Dutch lingerie models. About as daft as it gets.
Yeah, because who knows? Maybe that's the future of the when attendance falls. Maybe you replace the mascots with the lingerie models.
Ooh, paging Don Garber. You want to spike attendance and TV ratings, Donnie boy?
Yeah, because things might get crazy, you know, if they start doing it in Amsterdam, since, you know, Amsterdam's got that famous red light district.
I know, but Los Angeles, bikini models, get those out there. Come on, Garber. Give me some bikini models at Galaxy Games. Do it.
Whew, man, we're definitely Drive Time Radio today.
We are.
Talking about, you know, lingerie and bikini models.
All right. Let's gong it out. We have no time for you, hot
women.
Yeah,
gong it out. Let's get to the traffic.
That's right. Well, there's a pile up on the interstate.
Yeah. We're back to Potter's Bar. It's always back to Potter's. There's a queue back to Potter's Bar every time you listen to TalkSport.
All right, so now let's kind of break down this title race, Corey. We just kind of went over it with Leicester 2 points ahead of Spurs and Arsenal, and then Manchester City 6 points back. So would we say that's all she wrote there? Those are the only four that are really in the mix, because then you go back to fifth is all the way back to Manchester United, who I believe are 10 points off the pace.
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
So let's just talk about some of the unique things here. How big an advantage is it that Leicester City has no more cup football? And so the only thing they have to focus on is the league, whereas you have Spurs in second, as we said, still in the FA Cup. They have the Europa League, which will be both this weekend. So remember, this midweek here is Champions League, Europa League, and then you got FA Cup on the weekend. Arsenal, Champions League, FA Cup, and then Manchester City, Champions League, FA Cup. How much of a boost does that give them to be able to relax? And I should say that Ranieri did give them the week off, so they're not even going to train at all this week. They're getting some holiday time.
Yeah, so I think that's part of your answer right there, is that because they're out of the FA Cup and the FA Cup next round is this coming weekend, it gives them the opportunity to give them, you know, an entire week off like you said, not just from matches, but just from training. So, you know, that recovery time this time of year is, you know, is obviously worth its weight in gold. So it's an obvious advantage for him. Whether that translates, you know, to the field, obviously, you know, we'll have to see. But I think that will help them with their results versus the other teams that, you know, like you guys have, four matches in 10 days coming up or something. So obviously, you know, being in continental competitions, the intensity is a little different, but with the travel, you know, that can heighten, you know, any knocks or anything that's picked up in those kind of games. So in Leicester's case, you know, obviously having all that time off this coming week, that's definitely going to put them in good stead to be able to have a strong finish, because I think that's where in the past, the other teams that have been in multiple competitions this time of year that are still fighting for the title, you know, that's where some of those guys have kind of fallen off, is because they haven't had proper recovery time. Where Leicester, especially with having a seasoned manager like Ranieri, I don't think, you know, the other shoe dropping that everybody's expecting, I don't think that's going to happen because of the recovery time. Plus, you know, having Ranieri be their manager.
Okay. Yep. That is pretty succinct, and I agree with everything there. So let's kind of go backwards here and just talk about these different clubs who have these multiple competitions and what you think they might emphasize. Manchester City is in a really odd situation because they have the lame duck manager. Pellegrini's out. We all know Pep is coming in. So what do you think should be, with three competitions still on the table, all attainable in theory, what do you think the focus, what is the mindset of Manchester City and Pellegrini right now?
Well, the focus is, I mean, they're in the League Cup final, so just by default, you got to focus on.
Oh, yeah, they got four fronts to battle on. You're right. I forgot that. Yes.
Yeah, so just by virtue of being in the final, you have to take that seriously. Even though, you know, obviously people know that I kind of turn my nose up at the League Cup, but You know, I have said before that, I don't like the League Cup, but obviously if you get into the final, you got to try to win it. So like I said, just getting to the final alone, the focus has got to be on that. But in terms of the future of the club, you know, and I'm not trying to prescribe any sort of apocalyptic doom or anything, but just in terms of Guardiola coming in next year, the second emphasis for them should definitely be trying to make a run in the Champions League, or, you know, trying to qualify for the Champions League, you know, because that would be kind of an awkward PR move to bring in the likes of Guardiola, and then they get caught for that final Champions League spot and then have to go to the Europa League.
No, that is right. So, all right, let's move on to Arsenal. They have the three fronts as well. FA Cup, got Barcelona, right, coming up here midweek. So the Champions League could be off the table here soon, but Arsenal will give Barcelona a game, as they have the past few times that they've played, which has been quite a bit. And then you have the FA Cup. How much of a drive do you think there is at the club to become the first back-to-back-to-back FA Cup champions in a long time? What do you think is the plan for Wenger in terms of prioritizing these competitions?
Well, I think it would go League Cup, Champions League, even though, you know, he probably wouldn't admit that publicly. But yeah, I mean, I think having won the cup back to back the last couple of years, you know, obviously the priority, again, regardless of what they say publicly, the priority is the league. I mean, you know, I don't even think that's a question for people around the club, because, like I said, they may say certain things, you know, they may give you a PR type of answer publicly, but like I said, there's no way that the priority isn't anything other than the league this year.
Okay, and that's fair, especially with the title race being so close and you being that far up there. when you're trying to win a title.
Yeah, because especially with you guys lurking around, there's no way that, like I said, that behind the scenes, there's no way that they would want Spurs to, you know, to win the title this year when they have the best chance. So, like I said, regardless of what they say publicly, the league is by far the top priority.
Okay. And then we'll go to Spurs here. Again, the three competitions. And I would say, and I didn't think about this until after the match. Now, I didn't believe that we were title contenders. But, hey, when you're only 2 points out with, what, 12, 13 matches left, mm-hmm. you are in the title race. For how long, we don't know. But I think, as I said, the mentality of the club is strong. So I would say if you're Spurs, your number one priority has to be the league. Because you haven't been in this situation in the Premier League era ever. And you have to go back to the 60s and the 70s to where you were a legitimate title contender. So I say league has got to be number one. You can also play some pretty good sides in the FA Cup because you're going to have – those are going to be on the weekend, right? And your games will get postponed to later in the year. So you could put a pretty strong team out there. But Europa League – right, I'd say write it off at this point in time. There's no sense to damage your progress in the league when you have a chance to win the title for the Europa League.
Yeah, because especially with the influx of the TV money, you know, Europa League, you don't really make all that much money. So there's not that, you know, there's not really that big incentive other than just to get a trophy. But like you said, that's for a club like Spurs to have a chance at the league, you know, you have to prioritize the league. Because I'm, you know, I know a lot of people like the Champions League, but I'm definitely old school where, to me, the Champions League, even though, you know, Arsenal's qualified for it for 17 years or whatever it is, in my mind, it's still kind of like bowl games. Or, you know, the way people used to view bowl games in the old days, it's something you qualify for. So it's kind of like a bonus. So the only competitions that you're always in are your league and your domestic cup competitions. So the ones that you're always in, those are the ones you should concentrate on, at least for me. Now, obviously, once you get to the super club level and, you know, you got to please millions of fans around the world and you got to please directors and all that, you know, Real, Chelsea, Man U, that kind of stuff, then obviously continental competitions become priority for those kind of clubs. But like I said, for most clubs, the priority should always be the league, and you know, with the FA Cup second.
Okay. So, yeah. So we'll see what kind of rotation these different sides put out, because it's going to tell you a lot of how they value them. And realistically, there's not enough players and not enough time for you to go around to, you know, the politically correct answer now is, oh, we're going to go all fronts, you know. We're going to play the best we can and all. Well, you can't. That's just not realistic.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there. And I have some handicapping was done on Match of the Day 2 yesterday, Corey.
The UK one or the US
BBC version, yes. Okay. And they had on there the two analysts were Tim Sherwood – oof. And Danny Murphy.
Oof. Double, yeah. Oof.
Yeah. Now, listen to this. Now, when they asked Sherwood who he thought would win the title, he says he still thinks Manchester City are the favorites.
Interesting.
Oh, Sherwood. Never letting us down. And it gets even better.
Oy, if they would have had me at Villa still, we'd have been up there, right?
Yeah, maybe. And so it gets even better. So then – I don't know the name of the presenter, but it's the same guy. He's like, you know, some average English dude with a beard. He asked Danny Murphy, he's like, well, who do you think is going to win it? And he's like, well, he's like, I can't say who's going to win it. I won't predict that, but I know who I want to win it. And the presenter goes, well, who, Danny? And he's like, well, I could speak for Tim, I'm sure. He's like, we both played for Spurs, so we want to see Spurs do it. And you can kind of see the look of horror on Sherwood's face. Because as we all know, Sherwood is a gooner at heart.
Yeah.
And so then they kind of asked Tim, well, what do you think, Tim? And he didn't say anything. He just had this blank look on his face.
Maybe he really is a gooner.
He is. He's got season tickets there, his family. Crazy. But yeah, he didn't say a word. He didn't respond. He just was like, had this look on his face like, oh, crap. So fair play to Danny Murphy for getting some laughs for me watching the end of the match of the day.
I'm sure some words were exchanged in the pub afterwards.
Oh, maybe. Maybe so. All right. So, yeah, that's going to be pretty interesting to see what happens here. Tons of football. Everything's coming to a head. We'll be awarding trophies like crazy here, starting in a couple of weeks with the League Cup final. And this is what it's all about, all these meaningful games. So it's going to be great to see.
Yeah, and, you know, that's exacerbated because it's obvious, you know, the romantic historical season that we're having where, you know, obviously two people that are neck and neck in the title race, or, you know, two of the three that are neck and neck in the title race aren't used to being up there. So, like I said, I was all ready to congratulate Leicester and basically give them the nod until, you know, until Waylay came and sprinkled some header magic late on. So, like I said, not that I'm unconvinced by Leicester, but, you know, I still don't think they're, like I said, I don't know. I'm not really sure what I'm thinking, if that makes sense, because it's, they're not quite the favorites, but obviously I don't think they're the pushovers that, you know, a lot of people in my Arsenal camp are kind of, or, you know, are kind of intimating that they're, that now that we've beaten them, you know, now the collapse starts, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I wouldn't quite put them as the favorites though.
Yes. So thank you again, Danny Simpson. The thank you cards in the mail.
Yeah. Cause the other part I liked about that is Danny Simpson actually was a Man U U20 guy. So that was doubly happy for me because it's like, oh, we finally got a Man U guy sent off.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, what else was I going to say there? Something related to Leicester. Oh, I don't know. This is it. This is the time of the year where I do my traditional remaining strength of schedule for the run-in. And so I started to calculate those numbers today. So I hope to have that out sometime next week after these FA Cup games. So when the league starts up again, everybody can see, you know, it'll help us handicap things. Because remember last year, at this time, Leicester had by far the easiest schedule left, and they used that to make that major run that they continued into this season. So it does matter who you have left on your schedule, and so I'll do that analysis, and I'll have a blog out for you guys soon.
Yeah, because it's been interesting to see the some of the other projections that I've seen online that you know, the pundits still seem to be leaning towards Leicester, but the statisticians and the actual data analysts seem to still be leaning towards us. So, like I said, it's definitely interesting to kind of see the different prognostication models and theories.
That's right. So let's gun that out. And since we're using a gun, we'll gun the next segment in, which is going to be great here to wrap up the show. And that is talk of this Chinese, what is it called? The Chinese Super League? What's its full name? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, actually, I don't know. I thought it was just the Chinese Super League.
Okay. Well, that's why I wasn't sure if it was called the CSL.
Oh, yeah.
I thought.
I just meant that I don't know if it's got some like sponsor name attached to it or not.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't care about that. But so the Chinese Super League has been in the headlines, folks. And just to illustrate that, soccer is truly global and no league is in a vacuum. So let me run down the list of these high-profile Chinese transfers that have happened, Corey. We'll kind of get your thoughts.
All right.
So you got Burak Yilmaz has gone there. He's a pretty good striker out of Turkey. He was at Beşiktaş for a while. You got Robinho, which everybody's familiar with. He's made his way over to China. Alex Teixeira, the Brazilian, who was at Shakhtar in the prime of his career. Very good player. Former Chelsea loanee, Gael Kakuta. And you got Jackson Martinez, the striker from Atletico Madrid, has made his way. You got MLS product, Freddy Montero. former Marseille and QPR defensive midfielder, Stefan Mbia. Then you got Freddy Guarin from AC Milan. He finally got out of there. They finally offloaded his big money contract.
Inter.
At Inter. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Ramirez, which we've talked about in the show from Chelsea. And then I didn't even know this. We didn't mention this, but Gervinho, former Arsenal man, made his way to China from Roma. And then this is way off the radar. Those are all first division signings. I know a lot of people were reported that second division teams have been making all these, but according to what I looked at, all these teams are in the first division. The biggest signing out of the Chinese second division, which I didn't know about, was actually Jellyfish out of West Ham, the big striker, is made his way to the second division in China. So that's it's a pretty interesting list of players. And when you look at these rosters, they're like 98% Chinese or Japanese in most cases. And so they're starting to kind of do what the MLS did, but with promotion and relegation and without salary caps, they're able to bring in players in their prime for big money.
Well, yeah, because as me and a couple other guys have been harping on Twitter all week long, is that this is the thing that MLS people have overlooked. And again, as much as people bash Ted, one of Ted's salient points is that MLS is, no matter how much they try to deny it, the MLS is competing in a global market. So, like most protectionist type policies, just like in politics, if you're too protectionist, you're only going to eventually hurt yourself as everybody else expands or competes for resources around the world. So, like I said, that's the thing that I've been hammering all week long, is that, MLS, they could try to deny it all they want, but they're competing in a global market. And while China isn't, getting the Messies and those kind of guys, I mean, they're now getting quality guys that are in the, in the prime of their career, like you mentioned. So, like I said, it's one of those that with the promotion relegation and, or, with the open model and with no salary cap, I think you will start to see more of those kind of, what people might label like B-plus type of internationals or whatever. I think you'll start to see more guys migrate over there, for a payday, because that's the other thing that's been kind of amusing, watching people talk about, if you go to places like that, you're just a merc for the money. It's like, well, what is anybody who leaves their country to play soccer for, unless you're going to like Real or Barca and those historically giant clubs. I mean, technically everybody else is a merc,
Yeah, because it all comes down to the money, and this is a point we've made with everything. Follow the money.
Yeah.
How do you think England got all the good players? England used to be a predominantly English league.
Right, so it's like anything else. I mean, if it wasn't about the money, Croatians would stay in Croatia. They wouldn't migrate to Western countries for the money. So like I said, it is kind of amusing to watch certain people try to pass it off as like, oh, well, it's just mercs going for a payday. It's like, well, yeah, just like anybody else, really, I mean, nobody goes to Barca and plays for free.
No, at least not yet. Maybe Messi will someday.
Yeah.
Just to complete his godlike status. Maybe donate all his money, his entire wage to UNICEF or something.
Yeah. Plus, I'm saying it's, nobody accuses their own club of being a merc when they drop 50 million, euros on somebody, even though that's exactly what it technically is.
Exactly. So players are going to go where the money is. And if China continues to play, they're going to continue to get players. And that's, in the end, that does impact MLS, because now, sure, you'll get some good players here because the lifestyle here in the United States is good. You could make a fair amount of money. And as we've heard people say, when you come to the United States and play, it's really not all too serious. And you could get paid well, you could live well, and not have to work as hard. Now, the Chinese league, the quality is pretty poor. But they have a chance to change that because they don't have these artificial salary caps. They're not putting a ceiling on their clubs like we are here. And that's just that's a fact. If you don't like it, that's fine. You don't have to like it, but you should probably accept it because that's the truth.
Well, yeah, but I mean, look, I like to be an idealist as much as anybody else. But at the end of the day, what people don't understand about these quote unquote mercs is like, okay, yeah, I might go play in a worse off league, but if they're going to pay me a hell of a lot more than I could get in a worse off league that has a cap like the MLS, okay, say I make $7 million a year and I'm from an African country, all of a sudden that's $7 million. That's setting my family up for the next five generations. So who cares at the end of the day if maybe I play in a slightly crappy league when I can set my family up basically for life? So like I said, these people that kind of sneer at some of these deals, it's like you got to think of it. I mean, at the end of the day, they're professional footballers, so they're only doing what they've been groomed to do, which is make money playing football.
So like I said,
especially when they come from these, you know, these impoverished countries where they have the, you know, the chance to set their families up for life and for, you know, three, four, five generations, you can't blame people for, you know, for cashing in. At least I can't.
Yeah. And to wrap up this conversation with the point that you made in our intro, well, all the MLS people say, well, the Chinese league doesn't impact us. Well, reportedly it has. I mean, it's not official, but Seattle Sounders are losing a player to the Chinese league now, reportedly.
Yeah, because again, that's the MLS line is always, well, we're not really competing with Spain and for players like Messi. It's like, yes, that is correct. However, you're competing with all the other players that you can potentially sign, which are those kind of B-level internationals from those kind of countries or from the countries, you know, like Nigeria, like Obafemi Martins, who will go to other places for paydays. So like I said, that's what they can deny it all they want, but they're in a global market and they're eventually going to corner themselves in if they don't change their ways.
All right. And we'll leave it there.
Or they're going to forever have to chase, you know, NFL ties or, you know, money elsewhere through some other deals.
Like,
you know, sponsorship, maybe, and that kind of stuff.
Like pyramid scheme.
Oh, well, yeah, that too.
Pyramid scheme companies that sell, you know, I don't know, herbal remedies, let's just say.
Yes.
Hint, hint, hint.
Yes. Possibly.
All right. So there you go.
Allegedly. As always, allegedly.
So there's the show, folks. I hope you enjoyed it. We broke it all down there, and we'll be back next week. We'll have so much more to talk about because we'll have FA Cup and then European football to talk about. So who knows what will happen by then. By then, heck, maybe China will buy a European club and just move them to China. That's possible.
Hey, why not? Ring up Milton Keynes. They might be all about it.
Yeah. Yeah. MK Dons Beijing.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, so they, you know, MK Mao or something.
MK Mao. Yeah,
I got nothing.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, again, thank you everybody for listening, and we'll be back next week to break it all down. So for Corey Chatelain, I'm Chad Smith saying thank you oh so much, Mr. Danny Simpson, for breaking everything wide open.
Yeah, so maybe it was Danny Simpson that actually murdered Romance on Sunday.
This has been the Two Daft Yanks podcast. If you like the show, be sure to find the Yanks at TwoDaftYanks.com or at TwoDaftYanks on Twitter. There, you can stay up to date on all the Two Daft Yanks action by subscribing to the show.